Welcome to the Dave Gahari Call-In Show. Dave Gahari is the founder and owner of MoneyTreePublishing.com and SpeakFreeRadio.com.
We can trust, we'll say nothing to no one, no how, or we bust and never crack a smile, or flinch or cry for nobody.
After nearly a half century of research, on his mind, and you should call in and share what's on yours. Without further ado, here's Dave Gahari.
Everybody knows that the world is full of stupid people. Well, I got the pistol, so I'll get the
pistol. This is Dave Gahari. You're listening to the Dave Gahari Call-In Show on SpeakFreeRadio.com. I hope I'm coming in loud and clear. You never know with all of these gadgets and all of this technology, but I hope it is. And I hope it's recording as well, because again, we just don't know, do we? So thanks for tuning in. It's 6. Wow. It's June 25, 2024. That is my late mom's birthday, who passed a couple of years ago when I was sick with COVID or whatever it is, whatever that thing was. So happy birthday, Mom. Miss you and love you and love everything you were and everything you did. Wish you could be here. Today we have a very special show with a very special guest. And we're going to get into that right away. Don't know if we're going to take calls. We'll see as the time goes on how it unfolds. So I know it's a call-in show, but please be patient, listeners. And if you do call in and we do take calls, please keep it focused on the guest and the content of the show. Nothing else. Don't want to talk about anything else, whatever it might be. Just the guest and what we're talking about. And our guest is James Mason, who is, if you go to Wikipedia, he's a very well-known fella. You could see he's called the godfather of fascist terrorism. Whatever the hell that means. I know James. I've known him for over 3 years, and he's a great guy. And he is most well known for a series of newsletters called Siege, which were put out in the early to mid 1980s. So some of them were written over 40 years ago. But he is somebody who the powers who should not be keep a close eye on, and they want to make sure that they paint him with as nasty a brush as possible, and keep the goyim from understanding exactly who he is. I will just explain that Money Tree Publishing, one of our imprints, just recently released Siege, the anthology, the official anthology. And I have my phone book copy of this monster in my hands right now. 532 pages, full color, 8.5 by 11. You can see it on MoneyTreePublishing.com. And that is James's work that he did, like I said, over 40 years ago. All of the newsletters, all 71 of them, they're 6-page newsletters with inserts. And in the book is the acknowledgments, and with a warning And then the publisher's note, then the prologue from James, and then all of the newsletters, all of the inserts, and then an epilogue by James. And there's been actually another book that almost coincided with Money Tree's release of Siege, which is titled Neo-Nazi Terrorism and Countercultural Fascism, The Origins and Afterlife of James Mason's Siege by Spencer Sunshine. And I got this book, and I'm moving along in it, and it's very good, you know, for history's sake. So we're going to be talking about James, his life, and the Siege, and this new book by Spencer Sunshine. So let's bring James into the studio. James, can you hear me okay?
I hear you great, David. Good morning. It's still morning here.
It is. It's just 8 minutes after noon here in the Florida Panhandle and the Central Time Zone. But yes, it's still morning. Good morning, sir. Always great to hear your voice. And thank you for coming aboard. And thanks to Wolfric for getting everything hooked up. So
yeah, he's sitting right off to my right.
Awesome. Watching everything sounds great. Year. So he did a great job.
Yes.
Yes. So let's, you know, for the listeners who might not be too familiar with you, with your name, a lot of folks, when they hear the name James Mason, they think, of course, of that British actor. I think he was British. But this is a completely, different James Mason. In fact, you were born, or your birthday is a month away, and you were born in 1952 here in the United States in Ohio. James, just for the listeners, just give them a quick rundown about your childhood, how that was growing up in Ohio. It's a beautiful state. I've been there many times, and how you got involved in this quote unquote movement.
Well, it was a beautiful area, still is in many ways. You know, they're fouling things up as fast as they can. But in the 50s and 60s, it was beautiful all the way. It was a fine time, certainly in comparison to today, to be growing up. You know, it was a conservative Republican stronghold. Maybe it still is, but you know, today's conservatives were yesterday's liberals. You know how that goes. But it was beautiful and I loved it. And by the end of the 60s, I saw all this garbage creeping in, and you know what I'm talking about. And I hated it and I resented it very much. I mean, what did I know really except what I loved and what I hated? And only later was I able to put name tags to these things and get it understood. But it was about at the same time, and the year was 1966. And I was 14 years old, and George Lincoln Rock Vision. This was the year some of the Nuremberg defendants were released after 20 years of confinement. This was all over the news. Rockwell did his Great White March through Chicago that September, and you couldn't get away from it. And it drew me just like a magnet. And again, what did I know except my gut instinct? The things that were to be hated and the things that were to be loved, it was instinct all the way. And by December of 66, I learned how to contact the American Nazi Party, and that's what I did. And I applied for membership, and in 2 years, it'll be 60 years ago.
Wow, 60 years ago. Holy mackerel. So you actually met a lot of these figures that people can just read about and wish that they could meet, like William Luther Pierce, right?
Yeah, he was my mentor, Dr. Pierce, my mentor. And I don't shy away from telling the story that I had become so alienated by the school system. I was learning what I loved. I was learning what I hated. I was going to separate the two. Draw the one closer, push the other one far away, and it's going to run you into trouble with the school system. and it was headed for something bad. And as a last resort, I had been in the youth movement for 2 years at this point, called headquarters. So happened Dr. Pierce was the only officer there at the moment. So they put me through to him, and I said, hey, I need to really kind of get out of Ohio, get over to Arlington, Virginia, or someplace, and could you use another good hand? Well, of course, they always could. There was never a time when they weren't shorthanded. And Dr. Pierce, without any hesitation, said, yeah, grab the bus next Monday and come on down and see me. And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, I just interviewed a couple of weeks ago Will Williams, who heads the National Alliance. I'm sure you're familiar with that organization.
Sure.
and that name. And Will told me a story about how when he had his awakening, that he went down to see Dr. Pierce, and he was surprised. And this struck me because there was nobody there assisting him. The only person there was his wife. And it seems like many times throughout history we see these great people, you included, and there is a lack of assistance. And many times until someone sees that there's other people doing that they jump in, you know, to the fray. Have you experienced that throughout your time?
We used to joke, semi-joke, in Arlington, Virginia, party headquarters, about in future times we can say that we were Nazis when it was hard to be a Nazi.
Right.
And you know, when the times sort of get with you, it becomes easier. That's when they start coming in. What did they call them in NS Germany? The March Violets, you know? Everybody wants to join the party now. Right. When it becomes easy, when it becomes the thing to do. But at a time like this, and as it has been ever since the end of World War, it's not an easy thing. It's just not easy, but those are the ones that count. They matter. They're for real. And I think it keeps us on track. You know, I think to myself often, if somebody dropped $1 million on me today, I wouldn't know how to spend it. You know, and if we had 1,000 people right here in this town, I wouldn't know what the hell to do with them. We have just enough to do what needs to be done, and that's what we're doing. And it's sort of nature's way or God's way of keeping us on track.
Yeah, I agree with that. And of course, it's the mammalian brain that kicks in. You know, there's safety in numbers, I guess, right?
Yeah, but safety. So, if you're worried about safety, you better quit now.
Yeah, exactly.
And even then, they won't leave you alone. So you might as well stick with it.
No, absolutely. And a lot of this stuff that we just started talking about is in that book that I mentioned by Spencer Sonnenschein, Neo-Nazi Terrorism and Countercultural Fascism. Now, I got mine right from the publisher Routledge, and I used a coupon code to get free shipping, I think it was, or 10% off or whatever. You can also get it at Amazon. You got that book from the author. And
yeah.
You read it, and what did you think
pleased.
About it?
I was amazed. It is not a smear. I was looking for a smear, but it wasn't. It is in no way a smear. And it's a hell of a lot of good history. He's got some gaps, and he's got some holes. But it's, I guess, not necessarily the first of its kind, but it's probably the best of its kind to date.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And like I said, I haven't finished it yet, but I'm moving along. And if someone is interested in this particular history, then it would make sense to pick up this book. You know, so many things are happening every day that when we read about them in, you know, the Jews media, you know, or, you know, other outlets that are not the Jews media, like, let's say, RT, Russia Today, where this headline from a couple days ago, white Christians being replaced in Europe by Viktor Orban, the Hungarian prime minister. or today this came out, which is it's almost like you want to not believe it, but it ends up being true. French far-right candidate faces prosecution for election campaign poster demanding a, quote, future for white children, close quote.
Yes.
This stuff is real. I mean, what do you think is at the base of the attack on the white race?
I could say it a number of different ways, as I might have said it in decades past, but now I'll tell you, this is straight out of prophecy. And this is, as Charles Manson would say, this is straight Satan. And we know who Satan is. These Jews, if I'm permitted to say that, I guess I am. These Jews, which are the body of Satan on earth, are behind this. And their minions, of course, their hired minions, and those that are sincerely duped and brainwashed, who have over the years, over the decades, burrowed their way into positions of power. They got the government, they got the media, they got the schools, they got it all. And they feel as though now is their moment to close in for the kill, which is what they're doing.
Yes, absolutely. And I should have mentioned this earlier, but being immersed in this, you know, in the current, you know, zeitgeist of the day, when you said that, you know, if you could mention it, if you could say, for example, the word Jews, this is one aspect of this is that this is Speak Free Radio, so you could say whatever you want, number one. But number two is, since you've been out there, let's say even on the interview circuit, you've done a few interviews most recently, and over the decades when things were a lot different. Nowadays, pretty much anything goes, and which is good, because you don't have to hold back. So you could say anything you want and express yourself in any way you want. And again, I didn't mention that before, but yeah, these are whole new platforms where, especially since the October 7th event, whatever, you know, however that actually unfolded, a lot more folks have come into the fray and wanted to comment on it. So please, James, just use whatever language you'd want to and whatever terms you want. You're not going to be hamstrung by anyone. So,
well, I remember really, really well watching the news back in October when that occurred, that raid into Israeli territory. And I thought it was pretty spectacular. But I commented to my friend who was there with me at the time, I hope these people realize what they've let themselves in for, meaning the Palestinians. And we all know what that something was. Pure genocide. But my God, you know, and people don't think of this, and this is never mentioned. And I know you remember the 7-day war in June of 67.
Yeah, the 6-day war, right? Yes.
Yeah, 6 days. What the hell? And they took out the armed forces of a handful of Arab nations, Egypt, Syria, Jordan, maybe some others, I don't know, took them out in less than a week. This was full-scale war. Now look at this. How many months on are we? Over 6 months, they still haven't taken out Hamas.
Right.
That's spectacular. My God, that's unheard of. But
yes.
Look at the devastation, the price in blood. But sometimes it takes a price in blood if you want your freedom, if you want your dignity. And by God, they knew what they were doing, and they were ready to pay that price, you know? If only the peoples, the white peoples of the earth, were that much dedicated and ready to pay the price, we could free ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's probably the main issue that has allowed this this poison element to fester as long as it has.
And you know something else. I'm an older guy, but that doesn't matter. I'm a student of history, and I know you are too. And you look at these pictures of Gaza, and they're heartrending. But you know what? At the end of the Second World War, that's what all of Germany looked like. And nobody was given a damn about that. Nobody gave a damn. And you talk about genocide. They were taking the milk destined for the German babies and pouring it in the street. They were raping men and women, just killing them at will. And I mean, not just Soviets. I'm talking about U.S. GIs. Because, you know, all of my generation's parents were over there. And my dad, I'm happy to say, was in the Pacific. But my best buddy's fella, his dad was in Europe, and he witnessed the murder of surrendering German troops. And it's been brought out on some of your documentaries that you've released that, others have come forward with this, and they stated at the time, gee, I don't think I want to participate in this. This is murder. And he was told, if you don't participate in it, you're going to wind up in the same ditch.
Yes. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And that's not brought up. It's not brought up. And they talk about the war in Ukraine. Well, those are some brave folks, and they got all my blessings, and they're going to make it, too. They're going to make it. God bless them. But, Germany, they talk about the Russian threat. Germany had Russia beat. They had them beat, hanging on the ropes. Guess who saved them? This country.
Yep. Yep.
Talk about the threat of China. Japan had them beat. Guess who saved them? This country. And they do not mention that.
They're not going to.
They show maps now on the news quite regularly of Eastern Europe and how there is a train rail line from Russia to that little enclave they have on the Baltic Sea, if you know what I'm talking about. Kaliningrad, they call the city. And I wonder how many ask themselves, what the hell is that? What's that all about? How did that get there? What is that? And people being so stupid anymore and uneducated, that's part of Germany that was stolen from Germany at the end of the Second World War. And the Russians just took it. There were 20 million Germans in that general area that were expelled forcibly. They'd been there for like 600 or 700 years. 20 million of them, of which at least 2 million died on the trek west. Who remembers this? Who gives a damn? Who gave a damn then or now? It has to do with who controls the media.
Exactly. And that's changing. Dramatically.
It's slowly changing. It is slowly changing. Yes, it is. And it's very, very heartening for me to be able to observe all this.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And I didn't mention one other headline that I don't know if you had seen this, but it, like I said, it's almost like it's not real. And when I look at this headline, I'm thinking, is this real? And I actually brought it to the attention of a colleague of mine, and I said, do you think this is real? And he said, yeah, it's real. Here's the original article. Listen to this headline. This is from 2 days ago. Woman convicted of, and I'm not kidding, James, offending migrant gang rapists receives longer prison sentence than the rapists.
Wow. Yeah. But, you know, that's typical. It's shameful. It's disgraceful, but it's typical. And it only says one thing. We are enemy occupied.
Yes. But this headline, though, right? I mean, If we read this even a few years ago, we would, no, that can't be true. But it's true. She was gang raped in 2020 by a group of migrant men. Well, they're not men, but it says men here. And she just made a, what they call hateful comment, hateful remarks about them.
And what country she's going was to jail. What country was it? Not that it matters.
Germany.
In Germany. Okay, yeah. Germany is really under the heel. They're under the heel bad. Not only are they still enemy occupied, this country being the enemy, but their so-called government, nothing but traitors and sellouts. Nothing but traitors.
And, you know, you look at Germany and you look at UK and you look at Sweden, that just their parliament just passed a Holocaust denial law. Is there any hope for Europe? In the near term.
Yeah, it's tightening down. Somebody handed me a good piece of news just yesterday. I mean, a good piece of news. Some of these so-called immigrants are choosing to leave Sweden because they're getting the feeling they're not welcome.
Yes, I saw. I saw one. Yeah, I saw an Indian fellow who's leaving Australia because he thinks it's full of Nazis. So,
yeah, well,
yes,
maybe it is.
Yeah, but overall, you know, the bad guys are firmly in control, and they're able to obviously put people, in this case, a girl who was raped when she was 14, into prison for her words. So yeah. That's why I was asking, do you think...
Yeah, that's enemy occupation. Enemy occupation.
Yes.
There's no other way to describe it. It's the enemy. They're anti-white.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're in power.
100%.
And that's the same here, too. I mean, this is base camp for all that. This is ground zero for all that, right here. Right
100%. Here. 100%. You know, what you have gone through in your life in this, you know, in this movement, and I'll call it a movement for lack of a better term right now, but what you were doing 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, getting close to, like you said, 60 years ago. The same thing's happening today. You were using the same language. You were trying to wake up the goyim the same way. Of course, I know this story, but I think it and it's discussed a little bit in the publisher's note in Siege, but. Can you tell the listeners about that time you were in Silver Spring, Maryland? I think that was in 1969. What happened?
Okay, well, you know, I was brought down there, allowed to come down there by Dr. Pierce, and I don't know, they got the idea. I was always pretty, one of the few things I applied myself to in school was graphic arts. Maybe that hit a chord down there. So they put me sort of in charge of that sort of thing. And, you know, mind you now, there was none of this computerized graphics. You know, this was all, this was all Stone Age. But Robert Lloyd, who was one of Rockwell's top men, he said, hey, we want to do a super sticker and we want you to design it. Okay, we'll do it. So I did. And it was huge. And it just simply said white power message. And here was the phone number. And then off on the left-hand side was a big swastika. And, he was very pleased with it. He printed a bunch up on peel off stickum paper, and they were set to go on a certain evening early in 69. And I got wind of that, and I said, oh, man, hey, I want to be in on this. You know, this is kind of my baby, and I'd like to be there. And he said, well, okay. And so we took a carload into Silver Spring, Maryland, not too far up the pike, which was known as Jewtown. And we started putting these on Jew shop windows. Now, okay, yeah, we thought that was hot stuff, but I don't, you know, don't do that today, okay? Don't do it. We'll go into the reasons why not later. But we did, and we made a little headway, and then all of a sudden a couple of plain clothes cop cars closed in on us and basically said, don't move and get in your car and follow us. And so we followed them downtown. And they, among other things, the arresting officer said, yeah, my name is Officer Goring. I want you to know that. And we found you by following the trail of the peel offs from the backs of your stickers. That's how we got to you. And so long story. Somebody was shouted somewhere in the station. Hey, one of these guys is a minor. And of course, I was 16 at the time. I looked 30. And Yeah, I said, that's me. Well, they had to call Ohio, get my parents. They had to call Dr. Pierce. Dr. Pierce had to call Lloyd to come down and get me. And everybody else had to pay $25 bond forfeiture and get out of there. Now, that sounds pretty ridiculous today, but I guess then it was equivalent to $100, which is serious. Anyway, that was the end of that. So, you know, don't do things merely to antagonize the known enemy, because you're wasting your time. And in those days, they didn't have what they now call hate crimes. I'd hate to think what a person might get today for that same action. You would get years in prison. No question of that. So forget about that.
Yes, and you only hung up, what, two of them, right?
Oh, no, no. We hung up quite a few. Oh, yes, quite a few.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that you only had a few up, and then they found the...
No, we did pretty well, and Lloyd featured it in that next issue of the NS Bulletin. He got one of our supporters, who was a security man at a girls' college, to put on his uniform, stuck one on the big sign that said, "Welcome to Washington, D.C., photographed that, and that's what we ran in the bulletin.
Cool. Yeah, there is, and I've told you about this organization, the Goyim Defense League, and those fellas have flyers that anyone could print out that talk about various aspects of the enemy at gtvflyers.com, and they did jail someone for, he didn't even do it, but anyway, they got him. They locked him up for about a month for littering. And that was the same exact charge that they got those guys for, right?
Yes, it was littering. But I'll tell you another one, an even better one. And folks can read about all this stuff on our website. It's siegeculture.org. Okay, you can read this stuff. But Rockwell, in his Rockwell report, reported, I think it was about the end of 1963, a party member, a stormtrooper named Roy James, walked up to Martin Luther King somewhere in the South and let him have it right in the face. And Roy James was a big man. Let him have it good and solid. And out of this, he got 30 days in jail. And while he was doing his 30 days in jail, he was a hero, not just to the inmates, but to the guards as well. But don't try that today, because it won't work the same way for you.
No. They're allowed to do that to us, and, you know, they get rewarded. But if we even utter something to them, then, right, they get thrown in jail. Since it's really the same thing that, you know, you went through, that we're going through here, there really isn't much of a difference, except for, as you said, the laws are different. They're trying to pass hate speech laws, and even though there is no such thing as hate speech, and that's been ruled on several times by the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, that there is no such a thing as hate speech. You do think that, you know, we are going in the right direction and we're going to prevail, and that there has been a lot of progress. But besides suggesting to folks not to put stickers up, let's say, or flyers, because it's only going to antagonize the enemy, what can they do to educate the goyim about the enemy?
Well, number one, you got to educate yourself. Compared to what we were then, against what we are now, we were stupid. Historically and in so many other ways, I shudder sometimes when I think about that. Man, our literature list was a poor man's literature list compared to what there is now. You know, there was no internet. There were no CDs. You know, if we wanted to get the word out, it was leaflets, 8.5 by 11 inch leaflets. The only way to get those distributed was to get out on the street with them. And then the Jews and the blacks were going to attack you. And most of the, you know what? I was on more literature distributions than I can count. And I'll be damned if I know of a single thing that came out of even one of them. And so we're so much richer now. We have it so much easier. The content is so much better, so much bigger. It's like a dream. I'm glad I lived to see it. Not only does it give me hope, I'm sure it's going to work out. And we always knew we were in the right. We knew that. We were at the bottom, no question about that, but we were right. But the clock doesn't stop ticking, and things are coming around. We were talking about Hamas. We were talking about Ukraine, things like that. And the way the enemy is doubling down with his persecution and harassment, he's worried, he's scared. And that's going to tighten up until it snaps. But it's just, that's just the way things work.
Mm-hmm. And you had to end up, or not had to, but you, well, kind of you did had to, but you did end up behind bars for some ridiculous things, some ridiculous charges. And you actually have never punched, knifed, shot, bombed anyone, right, in your
That's
life?
That's correct. That is correct. I'll tell you, one of those garbage charges that was laid on me, and I had to report. I was out on bond for about a year, and I had to report each month to a probation officer down in Bent County here. And this guy was of Hispanic descent. He was about as brown as this coffee table I'm sitting out. And he even said, "Well, it's pretty obvious you don't deserve prison." But yet, what did I get? 3 years worth. And for anybody else wouldn't have gotten prison. But there you have it. You see, there you have it. We're outlaws, not that we operate outside the law, but that we don't have the protection of the law, because these bastards in control, these judges, some of these rotten cops, prosecutors and so forth, not to mention the media, they know which side of the bread there is buttered. And they're going to hammer us just to prove that they're not one of us, you know. And as Manson would say, "Oh, when any of these bastards can sink one of us, boy, that they can go home and screw their wives instead of having their wives screw them."
Yeah, right. So Manson, you brought him up before, but you just brought him up now. Let's for the listeners, what is the connection between James Mason and Charles Manson?
Well, we were in close communication for 10 years. I was growing very disaffected by the right-wing conservative backlash nature of the movement, you know. I'm thinking this is really getting nowhere fast. We have got to think futuristically. I had already noted Joseph Tomasi and his revolutionary style and rhetoric with his National Socialist Liberation Front. And you take it to the next step and you've got Charles Manson. Now what was he? He had about a 50-person colony, let's call it, in Southern California, all whites. You know, one of the questions was, have you ever been with a colored? And if you were, you were out. As with Hitler, it was personality all the way. You get a person like this once every several generations, I suppose. And as Dr. Pierce reported, you know, when this Manson thing broke and the trial started taking place in 1970 in L.A., the left tried to claim Manson as one of their own, and he didn't want that, and he knew that to try to explain anything to the media in reasonable terms was not going to work. So what he did instead was he carved that swastika in the middle of his forehead, and that did it. The left dropped him. And so I'm looking at this, you know, and somebody sent us a news clip when I was with the NSM out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Somebody sent us a news clip that two of the Manson women, Lynette Fromm and Sandra Good, were being held at Alderson, West Virginia, federal pen for women. And I thought to myself, I better get over there. And I did. And I met these people. These were some of the highest quality people I've ever met in my life. And they said, well, you know, we're just the moon. Charlie is the sun, and you got to contact Charlie. And I did. And that ran a good 10 years. Telephone conversations. I got a call one afternoon in Ohio. It was the operator. In the old days, you know, you have a call from a penitentiary. Will you accept the charges? And I said, yes. And the first words I heard was, boy, it sure sounds like Ohio. And it was Manson. And of course, he's from Cincinnati. And he talked just like I talk now. I don't know if I talk crazy or not, but he talked just like I do now. And his crazy act was for these damned fools running the media, whose job it is to make you look like a fool, to discredit your whole cause. And he wouldn't play that game with them. You try to talk seriously with them, they're going to trip you up every time. So he developed his crazy act. But it was never that with me. It was just a couple of Ohio boys chatting.
And you never got to meet him, right?
It got to be 1984, and I bought a ticket to out there by Vacaville, where he was at the time. It was set to go. And he called me and he said, forget it, it's off. They won't give me a private room for the meeting. And I refused to do it out in general population with all the noise and you can imagine, you know. And that was very, very sad. I'd have been perfectly willing to do it that way, but he wasn't. And that took care of that, so we never met.
Yeah, unfortunate. I just want to go back quickly about to Pierce, because I forgot to ask you this. But what kind of a man was he like? He was a physics professor, right?
Well, he was a genius. That much is certain. He was a big man. He was a giant of a man, good 6'4". I was surprised when I learned he was a Virginian, because he didn't have any of that accent. Robert Lloyd was a Virginian, and he had that Northern Virginia accent. But Pierce didn't have an accent, but Pierce was all business. Oh, my God. He did have a sense of humor, but that man was business. And it really told when he went his own way with his National Alliance, because, my God, what that man did in the time he had that thing. He went further than any of Rockwell's other close adherents. Pierce did better, went further than any of them.
And you never met Rockwell, right?
I never met Rockwell. I was 15 in August of 67 when he was murdered. And so not only did I never meet him, I never corresponded with him. I mean, what the hell does this man need to be corresponding with a 15-year-old, right?
Right.
He was so busy, my God. It was a killing pace, but he kept it up.
And his strategy, his tactics, what are your views on that?
Well, it couldn't be said he was the only Second World War veteran who woke up to and realized what the hell had happened, that this country had been duped and lied to into going into that war. Patton, and they murdered Patton, of course. There was a Marine Corps General, P.A. Del Valle, who woke up to it, and he was very vocal about it. He endorsed Rockwell. There was a rumor that is unsubstantiated that Marine Corps General Chesty Puller was about to openly throw in with Rockwell, but then Rockwell was murdered. But Rockwell was the only one who not only woke up, but he declared he became a National Socialist, and he openly began to fight and to promulgate. I mean, this man had a life. He had a future. He had a family. He had it all. And he gave it all up for this cause.
Right. And he has a couple of books out. Have you read all of them?
Sure. He has his autobiography, which is called This Time the World. And the same year he died, he released White Power. But for 6 or 7 years, every month, he released the Rockwell Report. And again, I say anyone can read every issue of that on our website at siegeculture.org.
Mm-hmm. And that's culture with a C, right? Not with a K.
Yes, with a C.
Okay. Thank you. Siegeculture.org. And that website is going to go through a like an upgrade coming up pretty soon, right?
Yes. Yes. Our webmaster is bringing that into the, not the 21st century, but the 22nd century, where nice. It's fully accessible, or whatever the hell, manipulatable by the viewer.
Interactive is
interactive, yeah. Right? You got to remember, I'm still in the 1960s.
Well, I'm glad you are. You know, that's what we need. We need to hear folks who grew up in America when it was still America. But even though it was still America, it was still anti-white. When obviously when you were growing up, unfortunately, and a lot of us, most of us were completely unaware of it. Of course, the majority of the goyim are completely unaware of it now.
Yes, yes, that you're absolutely right. That was there. It was in place. What we have now are the results. We're seeing the results. We have a sick society. You know, they just had. What the heck? Gay Pride Day here last week. About a good 100,000 queers marching through the streets of Denver. These idiots on the media news just smiling and how great it is and how wonderful it is. You know, when I was a kid, and you probably remember also, the two greatest disgraces you could possibly have were race mixing and queerism. And I remember in school, we would chide one another. I can tell you one, but I can't tell you the other. The first one was, hey, how'd your date with that little colored girl go the other night? And the other one was, well, I can't tell you. It has nothing to do with free speech, but it has to do with good taste.
Right. Right. It was great. It was great growing up in that time in this country, because we're only separated by less than 8 years, but those 8 years are, you know, even though it's nothing relatively, it's still something. I was born in 1960. You were born in 1952. And you got to see even a better America than I did. Now the people have grown up in the 80s, 90s, and beyond.
Well,
they have never seen it, right?
Started out by saying some years ago that unless you could remember the 50s and the early 60s, you don't know a time when things weren't totally insane.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I say, you know, people, it's easy to say, hey, yeah, well, the good old days. Well, you know, this place was still stricken with cancer back then. But it's like any cancer patient. If you got cancer, you think back a couple, 2-3 years, and your cancer hadn't advanced quite so far, that's going to look good to you. And that's what it is here. This place is stricken with cancer. It's dying of cancer. But if you can think back 50 years, you know, the cancer wasn't nearly so bad.
Excellent analogy. Excellent. Yeah. And that's a term that, or a word that is used by a lot of folks today. It is a cancer, and the cancer has metastasized to the point that it might be, you know, beyond repair, you know, at least that aspect of it. But, of course, hope springs eternal. I had a question, James, from someone when we were talking about Charles Manson. Do you have insight or info about the Manson murder case? How much was true? How much was made up, etc.?
Well, most of, you know, the truth will out. It's an old saying. And my saying is the books are getting better. And it's coming out now that the murders, that was pretty much on the part of Tex Watson. And Manson had a few words on that, of course, before he died. He said, you know, you got Tex Watson here, man. He's a bad dude. And, you know, he wants to go do something. I guess he's going to go do it. And they were all on belladonna or whatever the hell they were on. And it was a thing to throw suspicion off Bobby Beausoleil for a killing that had gone down previously, and try to do some good for Bobby Beausoleil, who was also a family member. You got the book, and you got the film, Helter Skelter, by Vincent Bugliosi, co-authored by Kurt Gentry. In other words, ghost written. And so it was a fabrication. The whole Helter Skelter thing was a fabrication. They say, well, yeah, this was the trial. This was the incident that ended the age of the hippies. And maybe that's what it was intended to do. My God, you know, what a mess that was. And that's the long and the short of that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for answering that, James. Let me just say that we're coming up close to the top of the hour break, and you're listening to the Dave Gehary Call-In Show with me and special guest James Mason. And you can hear the show on, of course, speakforyourradio.com. And a lot more people are going to be listening to the archive of this show. If you want to, obviously not in the archive, but now, if you want to come into the show to ask James a question or make a comment, obviously relevant to James and the topics discussed, you can just go to speakforyourradio.com and click on the call and chat tab. And this could be done on a computer or on your phone. And when you click on that call and chat tab, you'll see the icon for this show, the Dave Gehary Call-In Show. If you click on that, it will bring you into the studio, into the waiting room. And then we can bring you in for your question or comment. And you have to have, of course, your devices connected, your microphone, your speakers.